right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5, Toronto. Sound of your city.
And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Phil Conlon is here. How do you do, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
We are going to talk to about the movie Selma with Norman Otis Richmond, who is a bluesologist and a veteran civil rights fighter and an authority on historical matters, particularly Dr. Martin Luther King. And that will be coming up shortly. And at about 15 after, we're going to be joined by lawyer David Jacobs, and we're going to get into the subject of Je suis, who are you? Which Charlie? Or in my case, Je suis Ahmed Merabkat. That's the policeman who was killed trying to come to the aid of people who make cartoons about his religion. But that's the kind of thing we want to get into. Here's the deal. There's been some brilliant essays written. I'm sure you agree, Phil. Everybody's looking at the internet. It's brilliant. The New Yorker magazine has produced. Mondo Weiss has produced. It was just mentioned to me before we went on the air. Mr. Fisk, who is based in Beirut, Robert Fisk, has produced. So there's a lot of great writing going on. But then there's also the event itself of this past weekend, the appearance in Paris of world leaders sans the United States and Canada. And that, in my view, was not a mistake. It was policy. And Mr. Kerry, the Secretary of State of the United U.S., is going now to Paris under the cloud of saying, yes, I guess we made a mistake. That is not policy. That is crisis management. This is a big deal, what happened there. And the non-appearance of even the vice president, which is the most disposable part of the presidency. You're elected vice president to attend funerals. That's what you're there for. And so when he did not show any of them, no secretary of state, no vice president, obviously, no president, because this is.
And the Minister of Justice was in Paris, but he didn't attend. He left.
No, he's Attorney General.
Attorney General, sorry. Yeah, yeah. What did I say?
He did not attend.
He did not attend.
Which is to say, it's policy. Yeah. They check with headquarters. Should I go? You want me to go or not? And they said the ambassador went. That ain't going to get it. It's much too serious a matter for the ambassador. So we're going to speculate on why would this be? And believe me, there are some interesting answers. But we're joined now by a man with interesting answers. This is Otis Richmond, the bluesologist. Are you there, sir?
No, sir.
No, you're not. Well, you sound enough like Otis to talk to you anyhow.
I'm good. How are you doing?
Not bad. And tell me, you went to Selma. You were there opening night, I told folks that you are, of course, a civil rights veteran, and you're not suffering from post-traumatic stress, but you went through a lot over this issue of the assassinations of Malcolm X, the assassination of Martin Luther King, and the whole struggle for civil rights in America. So how did you feel about the movie? Let's get the big picture. What do you think about it?
I think people should definitely see it, and I think that it has a lot of inaccuracies, but in terms of Hollywood is Hollywood, and they're not. The person who made the film is from Compton, California, which is neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. Her father was from Selma. She went to school at UCLA. She studied African American studies, and she went to the same film school as Charles Burnett, mm-hmm. Julie Dash, and Haile Gerima. Mm-hmm. However, I think the film definitely depicts the time, and at that particular time when Dr. King was rising, I was not a Dr. King fan at all. Mm-hmm. At that 65, I was trying to make up my mind whether or not I was going to follow the Nation of Islam or follow Malcolm X, in a secular person. you know, I went with Malcolm. Malcolm was in Selma, by the way. They depict him in the film. He went to Selma, and
There's a character plays. There is a moment where he is seen in the film.
Yes, sir.
Ah,
yes. And he talks to Coretta Scott King, and they have a discussion, and they go back and forth, and then Dr. King gets upset at Coretta because she met with Malcolm, you know, because Malcolm had criticized him, and
indeed.
It
gives me opportunity to ask. Now we're all, with the time, we're understanding more who people were. Coretta King was regarded by many as more militant than her husband, and also one who had understood and experienced the life of a poor black person of the South more than he had. Is that in the film?
Not really. The film is basically it's male centered, even though it was made. It was written by a Euro American, from my understanding. But it was directed by an African American woman. Mm-hmm. But it's a male centric sort of film.
Mm-hmm.
Coretta did not get her due. She did not get her due because. You know, she went to, I remember her speaking in Nairobi, and, you know, well, first of all, Dr. King had gone, contrary to popular belief, Dr. King went to Africa before Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
King was in Ghana, and Malcolm didn't make that particular trip. Mm-hmm. And the only reason King left Africa was because he came down with malaria mm-hmm. and had to leave. But Coretta Scott King was... I remember people saying that she really did not, never really had a problem with, not that she had a problem, but she never would criticize armed struggle in other parts of the world, you know.
Uh-huh. She wasn't a follower of Gandhi.
I think she was a follower of Gandhi, but even Dr. King had a pistol, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's that little, you know, it's part of the culture. He's an American.
Yeah.
He had a pistol.
He had a pistol.
Yes.
He also had, in many of the things, one of the things the film didn't put in there was the Deacons for Defense were a part of you know, they work with Dr. King. The Deacons for Defense, they worked with King a lot.
That is a very important point, because such things don't exist today, looking back, I mean, that whole phenomenon of the Deacons of Defense was almost the issue for a period. But let me ask you this. About it's also said that it tends to depict King as being sort of the one who had the best grasp, and that other people, like the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which produced John Lewis, that they are not as flatteringly portrayed.
John Lewis is portrayed as doing it, going with Dr. King, but it's definitely they definitely do not respect the black radical tradition, which is portrayed by SNCC. Now James Foreman
mm-hmm.
is in the film, and he is portrayed as a young hothead,
yes.
when in fact James Foreman was 1 year older than Dr. King. Jim Foreman was born in 1928 in Chicago, grew up in Mississippi. Dr. King was born in 1929 in Atlanta, Georgia. Uh-huh. And, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood, so they always...
So he was an older hothead.
Yeah.
The elder.
He was elder, and I lived in the same house with him, and I know...
Yeah, tell us about him, by the way, some scale, nail sketch. What was he like? Was he a hothead to you?
He was a hothead when it came to, like, issues, but in terms of he disrupted the churches in Detroit and got reparations from the churches. I mean, in terms of, he was, tactically, he knew how to create drama. But no, he was a seasoned tactician, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He used to criticize, I remember him, he walked in on me one day, I was reading the Detroit News, the Detroit Free Press, and he basically said, well, you know, little brother, you should read this, but if you're really going to understand Africa and the rest of the world, you have to read the New York Times, and you have to read the New York Times. You should read that critically, because, you know, these the daily papers in New York, or not New York, but the daily papers in Detroit, Chicago, Los Angeles, all of them, they don't cover Africa and the world. So if you're going to deal with Africa and the world, you have to read the New York Times critically. I never will forget that.
Yeah.
But he was with SNCC. He was with the Black Workers Congress.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book. If anybody really wants this, when you see the film Selma, you have to read Kwame Ture's book, his autobiography. You have to read Harry Belafonte's book. He was a big part of that. And you also have to read Jim Forman's book called The Makings of a Black Revolutionary. All of those folks were there. And it was Jim Forman who sent Kwame Ture to Selma. Mm-hmm. At that time, Stokely was born in 1941 or 42, and Jim was born in 1928. So, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, not that I'm caught up on age, but, you know, Jim.
It's important to recognize generations and what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. And Jim was, Jim was even older than Eldridge Cleaver. You know, Eldridge was older than Huey and Bobby Seale. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, I mean, not that much older than Bobby Seale. But, you know, we had a guy in our organization, the Legal Revolutionary Black Workers, named Glanton Dowdell. Now, he was about the same age as Forman. But normally, the movement was made up of, when I was started in the movement, I guess I was 1920, but we had people in the movement that was, Mumia was 14 when he was in the Panthers, you know, so you basically, we were young people.
Yeah. No, of course, revolutionary movements are always driven by young people. There's no question. I mean, the elders have a role, but the young have to put it on the line.
And being born in the South, you know, we were brought to respect our elders. You know, that's...
Well, in terms of the... which direction that film is going, I know that there's been controversy about the arguments between, which historians seem to agree were didn't happen, fights between King and Lyndon Johnson sort of on a personal level. I know that in the book, Why We Cannot Wait or Can't Wait, Martin Luther King said that he had met Vice President Johnson when he wasn't a man with any particular hopes of being president,
right,
and that they had gotten along rather well and understood each other, and as a matter of fact, that Johnson was encouraging to him.
Right.
But then what really began to happen, in my memory, is that there was the issue between those two was the issue of the war, where the King departed and, you know, took the really heroic stance against the Vietnam War. Do they project any of that, his views of, for example, taking up the Poor People's March idea or supporting labor or opposing the Vietnam War?
They do, but they don't do it well. They don't do it good enough. For example, let's look at the whole question of the international question. Now, we know that one of King, this is what Stokely Carmichael says, that King's major contribution was pointing out the contradiction between U.S. imperialism and the African people. When I say point out the country, we got our heads cracked, but we got our heads cracked in front of cameras from India, from Africa, blah, 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 blah. Dr. King Stokely said that in his book, he said that when James Rapp, the white minister, that's in the film, was killed in, you know, after Selma, that... President Johnson sent a plane for his body, so on and so forth. But when Jimmie Lee Jackson was killed before Rev, Johnson didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at that particular time, I must admit, I was a foreman at the bar. At foreman at the mouth, I wouldn't touch a white piece of paper. I mean, so as far as we call Lyndon Johnson, Lynching Johnson, Lyndon Buffoon Johnson,
yeah.
And I'm not...
we were all quite impolite. I mean, I will join in.
Yeah.
If it's confession time, yes, a lot of people got really mad, as well they should have, frankly. I mean, you know, that's the moment. Later you can sort it all out, but, you know, we had to fight over issues, right? I mean, every day brought a new one. You could be high on somebody on Monday and very unhappy on Wednesday because of things said and done.
Well, Dr. King, first of all, Dr. King read Marx when he, in 1958, he read, I don't know if he read all of Capital, but I mean, he was familiar with Karl Marx. Like, yeah. I say, he went to Africa before Malcolm, but George Jackson said that, you know, King put two and two together before Malcolm did.
But he kept it to himself, right?
But I mean, like, look at the whole question. And Malcolm was the first one to oppose the war in Vietnam from the get-go.
Yeah.
Dr. King didn't come out until April 4th, 1967.
Yeah.
And if we read Michael Aaron Dyson's book, you know, after that, when King was killed, King was public enemy number one.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, he was not the holiday man and all of that.
No,
King was,
you're
like,
right. He tore the sheet. He said, "This is a criminal war, and we have blood on our hands." And oh boy, they had decided they'd had enough of that.
And they rehabilitated him, and they froze him in that "We Have a Dream" thing. Nothing about the poor people's.
That word "dream" sure covers a lot of territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, like Minister Farrakhan used to say, a man that has a dream is asleep.
Hey, that's a good. I like that. Is a good note. People should see it, but critically, right?
Yeah, definitely. And see it, and after you see it, read Kwame Ture's book, read James Forman's book, and read
Harry Belafonte.
Belafonte, the chapter. You don't have to read the whole book, you know. But I mean, you know, everybody has a library card. You probably can. There's some people that don't even know how to download a book on a computer now. I don't know how to do that, but, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm not claiming I do. Well, Otis, it's great talking to you. That's a terrific review. We do appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you again.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Otis Richmond, the bluesologist. And you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I forgot the name of the program. It's the Taylor Report. That's why I called it that, so that I would not be able to forget it. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be joined by David Jacobs, and we're going to talk about Je Suis Who.
Right here, right now.